This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hey, it's Long Shots, VSiN's golf betting podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin coming to you for the Players' Championship, the fifth major out there in golf. Before we get going here, you want to know, stick around. 16 different outright picks coming your way. We got at least 7 to 8 different placement market bets coming your way. And of course, if you have not heard already, VSiN.com is free this week. Wes not only has his write-up over there on VSiN.com, but will be adding in his placement and head-to-head market bets over there as well on VSiN.com. Absolutely free this week, all the way until the 16th, so be sure and take advantage of that. Guys, we'll put a bow real quickly on the Arnold Palmer. Colin Morikawa leading heading into Sunday, loses the lead to Russell Henley, who I look back at my model, modeled out really well for me. I don't know why I didn't really do much consideration there with all of that, but he's been playing.
Because you
really
can't bet everybody.
What's that?
That's why. Because you can't bet everybody.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
he rated out highly for me too.
Yeah. Because like me, you have PTSD and you've bet him several times and he gets right there to the line, just never quite gets over for you.
So he is your winner this week. I think that the big takeaway from a lot of people is going to be the fact that Rory and Scotty did not end up in the top five in this, didn't end up in the top even 10 in this. But, you know, Wes, I look at this. If you look at Scotty's profile, he led the field, you know, off the tee. He just putted like ass again. I you know, it's a deal for him that he's going to have to deal with and figure out what's going on with that putter. I mean, he changes to the claw grip from short, you know, when he's playing short. He holds a traditional whenever he's putting long, all those things like that. But I don't think there's like too much reason for concern with Scotty. I think that if you kind of look back at all of this, you just can't, you know, golf's hard. You're not going to win every single week. And sure, is there lingering effects of this? Probably, of the injury? Probably. But it's not like he's playing terrible. He didn't miss the cut or anything. I mean, he was inside the top 15.
Yeah. Yeah, it's encouraging, I think, for Scotty backers that he drove the ball probably the best he has all season. Rory did not. Rory was probably the worst he had been all season. Rory McIlroy, I'm just looking at some numbers here. Terrible, absolutely terrible on approach, which has been kind of his weakness, and then couldn't hit a fairway. And that's why he never made a move over the weekend. He was kind of lurking. He's like 2-3 back, where it's like, okay, Rory's still there. Because you see him on the live prices, even when he's like 3-4 off the lead, he's still like 5-1 to win the thing. But 42.9% in terms of fairways, I think 24 of 56 to be exact. Actually putted okay, but yeah, that's discouraging, you know, for Rory, because we know he's one of the, if not the best golfer or driver of the golf ball in the world, but just didn't hit a fairway. And you don't hit fairways this week, you're going to be in big trouble here at TPC Sawgrass.
Kelly, what about you? Any takeaways from the Arnold Palmer?
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys are hitting on a couple of them, but the other note I caught was that Rory, switched drivers going into the final round, which was a little odd. So that's something to keep an eye on. And then the terrible approach numbers. Look, I think I'll spin it ahead to this week. Who are you guys more confident in finishing better at the Players, Rory or Scotty?
This week, Scotty, for sure.
Scotty.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I mean, it's just crazy because I we were talking. I was as high on Rory going into last week as I have been in a long time, it feels like. I mean, he had a win already this year, and man, I don't want to overreact to one tournament. When you have guys as short of odds as those two are, you see one bad tournament, it's really easy to turn your attention away then and look elsewhere the next week.
Yeah, I think the other kind of standout thing to me here is, you know, only a handful of people got cut. Max Homa, Victor Hovland, two of those people, two guys that have just been struggling mightily. I don't think they're turning it around, guys. Like, I think that there's something real flawed with both guys. I was listening to a couple of guys that were on the ground there at the Arnold Palmer. Victor Hovland was out on the range, like slamming clubs into the ground, all kinds of things like that or whatever. Like, seems like his game has lost him, and you know, Kelly, you and I bet Max Homa maybe more than any two human beings on the face of the planet over the last 5 years. I can't I can't make the click. I can't make the click until I see something here. It looks like his game has lost him too.
Yeah, man, I've got more faith in Hovland figuring it out sooner, I think. But, man, I right now I don't think you can bet on either one of those guys. You're absolutely right. I think other thing, and look, these are, you know, just some of the bets that did get home. But and there, some of these guys that are going to be on the card again this week. I mean, just what Michael Kim continues to do this season is damn impressive. Finishes fourth. Just the approach numbers are crazy. Sepp Straka, you can throw into that mix too. Berger. I mean, even Berger, he backs his way into a top 20 finish again in T15 at the event. Just some of these guys that are playing incredibly consistent to start the season, not to be overlooked, and I didn't this week.
You're like, maybe I'm saying a little, you know, a little preface
not
here.
Not to tip my hand of what's to come, but
just
yeah.
A little tea. Just give him a little taste.
Of what's going on. This is moving on here to TPC Sawgrass and a very, very difficult course, Wes, as you just mentioned. 144 players, though, this week, guys. So a full field event, not like the Invitational that we saw last week. So we will have a much bigger cut than we had last week at this one, and does at least open it up. If you want to believe in some of the longer shot guys, they will at least be able to tee it up and have an opportunity to get it done here this week. But Wes, what are we looking at as far as this Sawgrass?
Yeah, TPC Sawgrass, Pete Dye design. This is one of his more devilish designs, because this is truly risk reward. He wants to make you hit toward the trouble, which in a lot of times the trouble is the water hazard. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that the rough is a little bit thicker. This year, they want to make, I think, the scoring a little bit tougher. But you can score here. You absolutely can score here, but you've got to execute the right shots and drive it and hit it toward the trouble. Avoid the hazards. 16 of them, by the way, most on the PGA Tour of any layout. 92 bunkers, fifth most on tour. Of course, we know the famous Island Green at 17. A lot of waste areas, a lot of tricky lies. Not only short grass around the greens, but thick rough around the greens. They actually did lengthen this course, by the way, to about 73-52. Still not long, but did lengthen it by about 77 yards. Set up basically the changes. Couple new tee boxes there on, I think, number 2, number 11. And also number 6, they replaced that big tree that they had. And I saw a video on social. You can look it up. How much money it costs, like all this money to add that iconic tree that you used to see on number 6 here. And then, you know, more trees on the back nine, especially on number 14. So they did make this a little longer. These, by the way, are POA greens. But it's overseeded with POA. They're Bermuda grass. However, these POA greens, as we'll get to when we get more into the stat modeling and such, this is not like Torrey Pines and Pebble Beach where you get that bumpy POA. Yeah. This is smooth. These are smooth. These are relatively fast, 13 on the stint meter. Fairways are narrow, 28 yards average width. So gonna have to, you know, pipe it tight down the middle, and you're going to get, I don't care how well you play, you're going to miss some fairways here. It's just the way it is. But Pete Dye, especially if the weather blows here, this course is going to be really, really tough. Early forecast says not too much wind until we get to like Saturday or Sunday. Thursday and Friday look pretty scoreable.
Kelly, with that missed fairway comes with a 4-inch rough, which they lengthened that by a half an inch this year. So we look at these different guys that might be hitting less than driver off the tee, but we say this often, you know, I mean, but the longer dudes are still going to hit their 3 woods and 5 woods longer, you know. That said, can they keep with the accuracy that we think is so important in all this, or does it even the playing field at least a little bit off the tee? And that's what we're going to see this year. You know, the results here recently looks like it does favor longer guys. I mean, as you start to go down the winners list, right? I mean, obviously Scheffler a couple different times, and Scheffler is certainly long off the tee, but there are definitely some dudes here of recent that it looks like maybe that length does matter. That being said, I think it is still up for debate for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting because the I mean, look, it's always going to help, right? It's never going to hurt, like you said. I still think the accuracy is way more important at this course, and you know, just some holes these guys are going to be forced to club down. It's kind of funny because I made a reaction when you look back to just 2019 when they did switch this to March, it's really more the big names. But you're right, Matt. You're like, these guys are all along except for Cameron Smith. You're talking about Rory, Justin Thomas, Cameron Smith, and then Scotty twice, like you just brought up. I don't know exactly what to read into that. You know, is it the distance? We've heard about, you know, the different weather. Obviously, different weather you're going to play in March from May, a little bit cooler. There's a little bit, just a little different wind directions. But I think it's just the marquee names that those guys are almost more. That's kind of the bigger takeaway for me. And I don't know exactly why that is. Yeah. If I did, then we'd be winning lots of money. But I don't know exactly why it is. But it certainly is a trend here since they switched it to March that I don't think you can completely ignore. Considering how often we bring up that this tournament is one of the toughest to predict because of how much water and how much penalty strokes are involved, right? But then
volatility.
You start looking.
Yeah, I mean, like,
right,
volatility is the way to describe all of this, not only from the course conditions just in general, but as you mentioned, I mean, there's just so much water that you get errant one time. I told a couple of my buddies texted me, like, who are we on this week or something? I said, just prepare to be disappointed no matter who you bet.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
like, you're going to have a guy in contention come Sunday, and he's going to find the damn water, and you're just going to be upset.
And you look, by the way, at the form. You know, oftentimes we get that grid every week. It's like, okay, recent form and then course form. This is not Augusta National. And, Kelly, we were talking about that with Gil Alexander on a numbers game. And this is not Augusta, where you get consistent forms. You will get, okay, win, and then you miss the next three cuts here. Mm-hmm. And then you finish 52nd. So it is very rare to get consistent form with players on this course because of what Matt spoke of, the volatility. And also when you look at previous winners, there's not really one profile of player that has won here. You've had bomb, you know, Rory can bomb it. And then you had Webb Simpson in 2018, who I think lost in ball striking and made it up for putting. Kind of like what Cameron Smith did, who was like 68th off the tee, almost dead last in his year where he won in 2022, but was number one on putting. So you've had good iron players, you've had bombers, you've had good short game guys. So It varies from Tim Clark to Rory McIlroy and everybody else in between who has won this thing in recent years.
The one, you know, a handful of courses on tour you can actually play as a player out there. This Sawgrass is one of those. If you stay on the resort, you can actually book tee times well in advance, and you could actually get out there for the mere price during the peak season of $750 if you do want to play around out there at TPC Sawgrass. Now, if you want to go in the dead heat of summer, Kelly, just a cool 500. You can get five bills. You can get around in over there.
I was thinking, if you want
96 and 80 and 145% humidity, you can you can pay 500 and you can get around in.
I did have the realization while I was handicapping this event that this is just like Doral this past summer for me. This is another Florida course that I've attended a wedding at, but and planned to play golf, but it was rained out. This was years ago, but still, yeah. So I got rained out at Doral this summer, and I got rained out of here when I was at a wedding here like 10 years ago.
Yeah,
great place though, gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's one of those courses you can have a golf cart, but you can't ever take it off the path. So it's like you might as well walk.
Yeah,
like so they do not let you ride the carts on the fairway. So it's always in pristine condition. They keep it amazing, which is you know why it's going to cost you 750 bills if you want to play this puppy. Okay, so we talk about approach every week on the pod, guys, and I think this is a discussion for everybody out there who does do their own modeling. And when we say our own modeling, hopefully we're getting new listeners to this pod, so we'll say it like we do every week. We didn't make our models. We use other people's skeletons, and we put in the information, and then the models spit out the stuff that we find important to us. We say every week, approach is important. It goes in every single version of our model. Now, this week is how did we go about it? Certainly, iron play is maybe the most important thing here. Kelly, you mentioned Cam Smith. We know Cam Smith just sprays that sumbitch off the tee all over the place and was still able to find success because he is so incredibly elite with his irons. So did we just completely overweight this? Did we put in proximity buckets? If so, how do we go about all of that? I think this is the discussion here. It's not like, do we love approach? Of course we love approach. Yes. I mean, that's all, and especially on this course. Because once you get to the actual green itself, that's the easy part, right? Like the greens aren't super, super crazy complex or anything or whatever. It's like it's holding the small greens after they get wind blown and hard and fast and whatever and all the stuff like that. But like once you actually get on there, then that it does at least that's probably the easiest part of the course. Kel, I'll start with you. What did you do and how much did you emphasize and how did you break it up, if at all?
Yeah, very, very heavy approach, probably as much as you'll punch into any tournament in the year, is the players, for me at least. I think everybody can get a little bit intimidated by this course because, yeah, you can hit it in the water and make double, and that's going to happen, and you're going to see that happen a lot of times this week. But it's also a very scoreable course. As long as you're keeping it in the fairway and you're hitting greens, you can score a lot of birdies. So that's really why the approach becomes so important. And, look, a little bit smaller greens, or the around-the-green play is not the easiest thing in the world. So yeah, scrambling around the green, keeping in the fairways approach is going to be the most important things, at least to me this week. But very heavy approach. I think when we often do dive into kind of different proximities that we're looking at and ranges that we're looking at, the one thing about this course is they're kind of scattered evenly almost all over the place. So I don't know about you guys. I didn't punch any of that stuff in. I think if you were, you maybe want to look at the two extreme ends of guy, what are guys doing well with wedges? What are guys doing with longer irons for those par fives? But I kind of went in a different direction with that. Went par five scoring is kind of my way to attack that. So it was a lot of just strokes gained approach. So opportunities gained, I punched in a couple of those. Just hey, it's a scoreable course. Need to be able to put it close to the hole as possible and give yourself a birdie look. Did that, and one of the few events just to pile on approach stats however I can. Green regulations, one of the few events I'll use that at as well, just because I want as many approach numbers that I don't think are hurting me, which I do think if you lean too heavy on one end, on one proximity range or another, that could end up skewing your numbers a bit. Just overall approach stats is what I really wanted to look at the most.
There's any number of ways that you can do this, and not one of them necessarily is wrong because of all the variants that we talked about, because you can win this thing striping irons, and look, that's usually always the mainstay, right, where you at least start and then go from there. I think everybody that I looked at, save Scotty was seventh on approach last year and then fourth the year before. Everybody else is kind of like top five, top six on approach, save for like there's always an outlier for everything here. Webb Simpson was 92nd on strokes gained approach that week, who usually was pretty sharp in his irons back in the day, but was number one in putting. Then you can go off the tee. Scottie Scheffler, number one here last year for stroke gained off the tee. What we mentioned earlier, Cam Smith lost 5.2 off the tee, 68th. But led the field in putting when was fifth on approach. So you can go so many different ways here, and it's not necessarily wrong.
Yeah, the one thing I did is I did put heavy emphasis on recent iron play. I kind of want dudes that are coming in pretty confident, right? So in a mixed condition model, and again, I'm assuming that we're getting new listeners here and certainly new viewers maybe over on YouTube. Hello, by the way, this is what we look like. Thanks for that. Hit the subscribe button. Come back. Join us. I can put a baseline in. So like I put a baseline in of 30 rounds, but then I kind of laddered the approach stuff to where it was like strokes gained approach, last 24 got a percentage, and then last 12 got a percentage from me. So I did the like overall baseline, and then I did like I kind of laddered it to closer as well to see who is really kind of coming in confident and swinging the irons very, very well. So I think the only thing I did differently was I want dudes that are playing well with the irons right now. It's kind of how I made it just a little bit different from what I would normally do.
Yeah, very much similar approach for me. That is one of the things we've kind of seen pan out from this event. It is guys that come in good form with their approach usually tend to do well here. I think that is a trend you can latch on to. I think it makes sense. You're still at the near the beginning of the season. And, yeah, Matt, this is really the first event that I really focused in on last 12, last 24 numbers. I really didn't go any further back from that. I want to be drawing not only off of just this season's data for the most part, but really what have these guys done the past 2-3 weeks heading into this event?
Yeah. And Wes, I The other thing I think that is at least somewhat interesting is how we're approaching the scrambling around the green type stuff here too. Because as we said, these are small greens. The winds pick up, you're just going to miss them, right? And you're going to have to be able to try and get up and down, avoid bogeys as much as humanly possible. See what take par, make sure understand that par is a good score. Don't try to get all crazy with all of that. And so it does also become is how heavily do we go with the around the green and the scrambling stuff as well?
Yeah, and I did a little bit of that, and I think you know, that usually isn't necessarily when I was looking in previous years indicative of a winner, but nobody's really bad. Like there was there were no outliers like we saw with Cameron Smith, what I just mentioned off the tee. Like everybody in recent years around the green, some were in the top 10, some were in the top 20, but nobody really was like, okay, you're 50th for strokes gained around the green and you win the Players' Championship. You still got to be, I think, at least in the top, however many make the cut, it's 65 and tie, so let's say it's 65. You probably should be in the top 20 to 25% if you want to win this thing around the green.
Outside of that, guys, like I said, I sprinkled in bogey avoidance, good drive stuff, because I, you know, listen, if you barely miss the fairway and can still get it onto to the green in two, I'm okay with that. I did just go some straight accuracy in there, and mainly because I wanted to have a sortable column in there in the model in case I wanted to do some tiebreak type stuff. So I wanted to see where that lie. And then let's see, the only other thing, total driving, and then. Yeah, total driving, and then some a little bit of birdie or better percentage gained on the field, just so that I can see these dudes that when we do get in super tough conditions, that they are scoring at a little bit better relative to the rest of the field, not just straight birdie or better percentage, because that favors a guy like Sam Burns, who, like, you know, like Sam Burns very well on Thursday. Might have six birdies, but then he might have four doubles. I mean, like, that's just like, it's just the it's way the, that he goes. Yeah. So
lead and birdie are better, but last and bogey avoidance.
Yeah. And stuff like that. So that's kind of with me. Wes, how did you round out your model this week?
Yeah, look, I started with approach. I think that you have to. I don't think you have to weigh it necessarily any more than off the tee. I did some good drives gain because I did want to incorporate a little bit more accuracy here, and knowing that guys are going to miss fairways, but still, what good drives gain does is, you know, your ability to reach the green even when you miss the fairway. You know, if you're in one of those bunkers or if you're in the rough where you could still, you know, you've avoided the hazard, but you're still in some trouble and can still reach the green. So I looked at good drives gained, a little bit of a combo platter with around the green and scrambling. And oftentimes you're going to get very similar guys. So you're going to get a lot of overlap there. Like, for example, Hideki Matsuyama, third around the green and first in scrambling. So you're going to get a lot of those similar names if you're looking at that. Bogey avoidance and some birdie or better as well. And the bogey avoidance mainly is because of so many hazards. I feel like you're going to, you know, have that where you're using the around the green and the scrambling to save your pars, but avoiding the bogeys is really going to be just about not hitting it in those hazards. And then a couple ones I just looked at for context. The par fives are relatively gettable here. The birdie or better rate's about almost 40%. Even though you got water on three of those four par fives, you got to be willing to attack those. Looked at a little bit of just general putting. I didn't go specific surface. So you don't want, some weeks you can go strokes gained Bermuda or strokes gained bent or POA. I went general here, even though, because these are pretty smooth greens that are true. Like we said, you can win putting the lights out here like Cam Smith proved in 2022, like Webb Simpson did in 2018. But you can also be like Scottie Scheffler and be 37th and 48th over the last 2 years and still win and win convincingly going away there at the end. And then I did look at a little bit of Pete Dye, because you have a lot of the Pete Dye trademarks here. You got the railroad ties. You got all the dogleg fairways. No hole goes in the same direction from one route to the other. You've got the water hazards in the bunkers, the Scottish-style bunkers, risk-reward golf. So I did want to look at, you know, who's been the best on Pete Dye over the years. And of course, I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. Who's number one in Pete Dye average per round?
Yeah. Yes, we don't need. It's like we could almost just say who's number one in everything except for like putting. Like, yeah, except for putting. Almost like, it's number one and everything except for, like, putting, basically. Kelly, I did. I should admit, I did put in one little bucket of 125 to 150. If you go in and you look at the average approach distance by hole, you know, 6 is 121, 7 is 144, 10 is 135, 14 is 163, which, you know, a little bit more than 150, but you get it. 15 is 147, 17 is 131, 18 is 155. So it's a lot of those middle iron, like a lot of those middle iron holes here on this course. And so while I don't really like doing the bucket type stuff, because I think, what is the sample size we're getting? What type of courses are they playing these off of, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There were just so many on this one that I did put in the 125 to 150.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, you're going to they're going to be stretched out, but that's at least you're in the mid range, right? Yeah. That's going to capture that the best. Yeah, it's pretty similar from what you described, Matt. I did mix in a lot of different, like I talked about already, a lot of the different approach stats mixed in that. I didn't do anything with proximity, but I get where you're coming from. And then off the tee, it sounds like me and you were attacked it pretty similarly. I used a fair amount of stats, strokes gained off the tee, good drives, accuracy, fairways, kind of wanted to look at a little bit of everything, just to, you know, really find the fairway finders out there. That's what we're looking for this week. And then, you know, scrambling around the green, like you talked about, Wes, some of that's going to overlap, but I want to look at all that. You don't want anybody who's going to be too poor in that this week. Bogey avoidance, par five scoring, and then opportunities gained, birdies are better. That's pretty much my whole model this week.
Hole number one, fairway hit percentage, 58%. Two is 50%. Four is 62%. 11 is 68%. 12 is 52%. 18 is 47%. One out of every two golfers is going to miss the fairway on 18. So, I mean, like, again, when we talk about accuracy and keeping it in the fairway and not spraying it, like, it is just a very tough course when it comes to getting that done. So, now you know what we threw in, how we spit it out, and why we did it. And so, let's go ahead and get to the stuff that made the card. Wes, we'll kick things off with you here. Why don't we start, because we can explain a little bit later whenever we get to maybe the longer shot dudes, if we have any of those, or middle shot. Is there anybody towards the top of the board that you put on your card this week?
Just one for me. Yeah. It was not Scottie Scheffler. I'm going to probably end up having to do what I had to do last year, not having him pre-tournament when I had Schauffele and Harman. It's like, okay, here he comes, so I got to grab some of him, and that's how I made a little money. I'll probably end up having to do that again. But you know what? If he wins here three times, which is the least predictive event probably of all of all of them on the PGA Tour, if he wins here three times in a row, I just got to tip my cap and say, man, he's the best of the generation, and that's what he did. So I forewent him. I considered Colin Morikawa. He's the one that scares me that I did not play this week, but I wonder, because he should have won, I think, last week. Credit to everybody that was on Russell Henley. That was a hell of a chip in on 16. You know, and I'm glad you got home, but Colin Morikawa, I felt, should have won last week, but I don't know if I think he's too obvious or what, but I forewent him. So my guy at the top of the board that I went with in the top several was the big Swede, Ludvig Åberg, at 19-1 is where I got him. I know there were some 20s on the opener. He's a guy now that has proven he can win a big event, that he can win. And he won at the Genesis Invitational at Torrey Pines. He contended in two majors last year, and what was essentially his first full season on the PGA Tour, was in the mix on the weekend at the Masters and the U.S. Open. T22 last week in Bay Hill, but he was second off the tee and eighth for accuracy. Only one start here at the Players Championship. And, you know, in my trends piece that was in the piece up at VSiN.com, I talked about how experience matters. It usually you got to have a few starts before you break through here. But I'm thinking talent's going to outweigh experience. He was eighth here, by the way, on debut, was seventh here in the junior players in 2018. He also is a local. He is a Pontevedra Beach resident, moved there, bought a house there last spring, practices and trains right here at TPC Sawgrass. So maybe as close to a home game as you can get for the Swede, and Swedes have done well here. Henrik Stenson, of course, a former players champion. So I'm buying into Ludvig. I think he's going to win. I don't think the Genesis was his only big event he's going to win this year.
Kelly, anybody 20 or shorter for you?
A couple Colin Morikawa. I played him.
We can split the shorties because I told y'all I'm chalk donkey this week. I played Morikawa and Ludwig, so there we go. So I have both of them. So I've got your guy and I got Wes's guy this week. Yeah. I can't argue with them. So I'm doing it right.
You beat me to the punch, Matt. I was going to say, I've played Morikawa. Man, I've been staring at that Ludwig number this whole time, though. Mm-hmm. Least predictive, volatile golf course. I don't know if I want to go with two guys in the teens, but, man, I really don't want to miss out on that Ludwig win either. And I still feel like when you're talking 19-1, 20-1, we're a little too long on the what kind of talent he's bringing to the table.
I will say this. The scary thing about him is we saw the YOLO factor come into play last week, right? I mean, he put it in the water, I think, three times over the course of the four rounds. Like, Ludwig's great for the game, but also a little maddening if you're betting on him because he walks up to the ball and he looks at the hole and then he just swings and hits the ball. Like there is no can't lay to him, like, at all. Like, there is no whatever. Like, he just walks right up to it, and one of those times he put it in the damn water, and you're just kind of like, bro, think about it for 8 more seconds or something before you do it. But yeah, I mean, it's I think we take the immense amount of good that he brings with the bad as well. I kind of like the YOLO attitude that he's got. So and obviously the talent, just checking all the boxes basically that we're looking for here. A little worried about his short game, a little worried if he misses these greens a ton, because we've seen him like skull chips and stuff, like, which, like, you don't see pros do very often. But outside of that, everything else just completely checked the box for me. So, yeah, that's why I ended up there. What about you with Morikawa? What was it?
Well, I think, okay, so this is, yeah, I'm glad you circled back to Morikawa, because this, I think, the ultimate betting truth serum, if this was another course, another tournament, I don't know if I'd be betting Colin after last week. I don't know what to take away from that, right? There's a lot of good that you could say Colin Morikawa has done this season. He did in that tournament, but, man, a chance to win. What do you have, a 3-shot lead going into the back nine? I mean, like, you let that slip away, and we're talking about a guy who piled up the top 20 finishes last year, top 10 finishes, couldn't get it home with a win. It's been a little while now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was screaming on this pod so much last summer. I'm going to keep betting this guy. He's right there. He's as good as anybody. But, I mean, what? He then left and didn't talk to the media. I saw his press conference today, which was a little feisty, too, of just, hey, I was not in the right headspace. And I get all that, but I don't know. I don't know what we're getting with a pissed-off Colin Morikawa, right? Is that a really good thing or a really bad thing? Because it could go either way, it feels like.
A player of his caliber should close that out.
Mm. Yes. Yeah,
even though that's a really good field and a really tough event and a tough course at Bay Hill, if you're an elite player, I think you do close that out. And, you know, I thought for sure he's going to finish this off. He just looked so good and was hitting it well and just kind of got stuck where he turned into Colin Parikawa.
Yeah.
And he couldn't, you know, keep putting the pressure on and keep putting distance away from these guys. So I understand why it was, because he's obviously got the pedigree and the talent. He can win anywhere. But he was actually, I noticed when I was doing my write-up, I saw a trend. I believe since the start of the calendar year, January 2024, Russell Henley and Sungjae Im had the most top 10s on the PGA Tour without a victory.
Yeah.
And I believe the number was 10.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, 10 times he's been right there, you know, in the mix and just hadn't been able to get it home. So now Henley, of course, removes himself from that list as he is now number 7 in the world.
Y'all, yeah, Kelly, so I don't bet Morikawa very much. But the thing that I do that I kind of have with him is, like, I kind of want to hit him while he's peaking because he kind of does this, you know, he's kind of one of these, like, up and down dudes. And so I think he's peaking right now. So I want to go ahead and get in before we get one of those inevitable slumps. And so that's why I ended up coming in here, because I think we're probably getting the best of him that we're going to get right now. And, you know, again, if we go by his history, there's going to be some sort of little kind of down swing at some point. So I'm going to try to capitalize here.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like I said before, it's, I think if it was a different event, I might look somewhere else, but what did we just talk through what we're looking for in a golfer this week? Mm-hmm. He fits the profile better than anybody that's out there right now. I think you could say if you were confident in Xander Schauffele's game right now, sure, he'd be right up there too, but I'm looking for a fairway finder. He's going to get the fairways and he's going to hit it. He's going to be quality on approach. And he's going to be quality around the greens and scrambling. You're talking over the last 24 rounds, 19th off the tee, 7th on approach, 4th on birdie or better, 5th in driving accuracy, 9th in bogey avoidance, and 1st in opportunities gained. He checks all the boxes. I couldn't ignore it. I had to play him outright. I just do think, from what we're talking about over the past year, and you brought up that stat, Wes, I saw that as well, on the top 10 finishes, this is where you got to ladder down a little bit, right? Play top 5, play a top 10 on him. I'm not confident where he's at with his closing ability right now. So played both top 5s and top 10s on him as well to cover that.
All right, Wes, what about 20 to 50 range, kind of that middling range here in the odds board?
Yeah, have 3 in the mid-range, actually, this week. It is now dipped from the number I got it, so I'll give it out kind of where it is. I think there's still some 25 or 28 I got north of 30 with him. Hideki Matsuyama, who won the season opener, of course, at the Century, feel like he has a little bit of unfinished business with this place, where you're always motivated to win a big event like the Players, but you know, maybe a little bit extra, because we all remember very well in 2020, or 2020, I should say, not the extra 20.
2020,
yeah. Yeah, I know. I did it 3 times there.
That's from a time machine, bro.
Wes, it felt like 2020.
It did.
Like 2020.
God, man. That was a long year, longest of our lives. Of course, we remember Matsuyama shot the opening round 63 to break the course record at TPC Sawgrass, and then the event got canceled after the first round due to COVID. So he's... The last couple, I mean, the first time maybe not so much, but ever since then, he was 5th in 2023 and he was 6th here last year. And look, I don't want to overrate recent form, because it can go sideways here really quickly, and you see that pretty much with every player. But Matsuyama, I like what he's doing, especially around the green. Leads the PGA Tour in scrambling, 3rd around the green. The putter has been relatively a little bit more consistent. We know it can be bad. We've seen it be bad with this guy. But Matsuyama, I think, still playing very consistent golf, even from that opener where he won the Century in Maui. So I do have him. Got him at 33. I still think he's bettable at 25 mm-hmm. or 28. Still think he's worth it. One guy I bought on the dip, and the numbers do not bear it out for this guy. I am going with gut here, and I went Patrick Cantlay at 41.
Oh, that is a gut call there. Woo!
It is a gut call, because if you look, the guys that play well on Pete Dye, I'm just going back to, yep. Hey, this guy loves Pete Dye. And last year, Scheffler, of course, won. Harmon and Schauffele were 2 of the 3 runners-up, and I happen to be on both of them, unfortunately. Those guys ranked 1st, 2nd, and 4th, respectively, over the last 50 rounds, total strokes gained on Pete Dye. By the way, Justin Thomas in there in between them at 3rd. Who's 5th on that list? That's Patrick Cantlay. And he's only been 19th was his best finish here 2 years ago. He's never done anything of note, but we've seen those players in the fast never do anything of note and go on to win. Typically, driving, I think, is the best part of Patrick's game, but he's been a little bit better on approach, top 12 in each of his last 3 starts in the field. Disappointed at Bay Hill when some people jumped in on him where he was T31. So I'm just taking a number mm-hmm. here and going with the gut, because there is really no statistical evidence to back this up, because he just has not been in the mix there for a while. He's not been the same player. Maybe he comes a little bit off the radar this week. Patrick Cantlay at 40, also at 40. A guy that does have a lot more consistency, and that's a guy I was on last week, Shane Lowry, at 40-1. He was 36-hole leader. I was feeling good going into the weekend. I'm like, man, he's going to be in this. Then he stumbled on Saturday, eventually finished T7. 2nd in greens and regulation, which Kelly mentioned earlier, that maybe you take that into a little bit more account this week, along with the eventual winner, Russell Henley. So he is hitting greens, staying out of trouble. You don't want to, you know, it's a fool's errand to look for the course form, but he's one of the few players that has consistent finishes here in recent years. 3 top 20s in the last 4, including 8th in 2021. So Matsuyama, Cantlay, and Lowry in that mid-range for me.
I played 3 in this range. One of them is one of your guys. I did play Shane Lowry as well, and I actually like him at this course better than I like him last week because we're not worried about distance. Kelly, as a former big guy yourself, people make certain assumptions about your physical appearance. And people think because Shane Lowry is a husky fella that he just must hammer it out there. But that is actually not the case with Shane Lowry, right? Like, he isn't one of the longest guys on tour. And I think that this course that does at least mitigate the advantage that people get off the tee actually works to his advantage. And if we're going to really emphasize approach and saying, hey man, all you got to do is hit that fairway finder out there and maybe a 3-wood or something off of the tee and then use that elite iron play of yours, I think that really does favor Shane Lowry a ton. 8th overall in that mixed condition model that I was talking about. And if you go in and you start to look, would probably be a little higher, but off the tee the last 3 events, because I did last 12, he's 108th. But again, we're talking about tournaments in which you're still driver heavy and all of that, which we're not going to be driver heavy here in this tournament. And so I'm a little less worried about the fact that he was 108th out of 144 over the last 3 events coming into this thing, because I think that that's going to be a little bit less important. So again, I did Shane Lowry as well in this range, a little bit shorter than that. Look, I'm going back to the well again. Justin Thomas is absolutely stroking the irons like nobody's business, but he can't putt it in the ocean. And, you know, that is a little worrisome for sure. But again, if we're getting to the greens and we're saying these greens, at least once you get there and if you can hold them and you can do all the things like that, maybe they're not as tricky as what they've seen over the last few weeks as well. Dude, he's so good around the greens. He's so good everywhere except right now at putting and all that. So I'm just going back. There was a 26 on open. I think you can still find a 25 out there on Justin Thomas. Like, it just, to me, if he can run pure for a weekend with the flat stick, I mean, you look and it's really, I mean, he's green across the board really for the stuff that we're looking at here, except, you know, again, little spray again, kind of like Lowry off the tee, but hey,
yeah,
we've seen Justin Thomas, like, he can hit those stingers with a 3-iron if he has to, if it comes down to all of that. And so Justin Thomas made it in this range for me. And Kelly, I stole your boy for later on in the calendar season here, but Sepp Straka at 50-1, right at the edge of this little range that we're going for, the 20-50 round. Straka obviously getting bet a ton out there in the market, because I think I saw one book out there that is down to like 28 on him.
Yeah, I saw that too, and that's why I left him off, because I was like, man, I'm totally late to the party. I don't want to be early for the funeral here. If you got 50 like you got, that's a damn good number.
Yeah, he is down to 28 at Caesars right now, which is just absolutely...
Well, Matt, like, let's be real about it. He's down to 14-1 at one book here in town.
Yeah, that's so... So we're joking here, and like, to let you guys in on the joke. So, you know, we have a couple.
I'm not joking.
We have a couple. Well, I'm saying it's an inside joke. We don't know what we're talking about here, but it's like, there's a book here in town. We have a couple books in Vegas or I should say Nevada that you rest of country don't have. And sometimes they just have odd numbers posted. And then Kelly sends me a screenshot earlier today, and Sepp Straka was like shorter than like almost everyone in the field. And so it's just like, what is going on here? And Kelly, they have not fixed it as of time of this recording. So maybe it's not a glitch. Maybe someone came in and just like unloaded on Sepp Straka and they want no more liability to him or something.
Yeah, maybe. I'm on Straka too. Look, that my immediate reaction was after last week was to add Straka for the Masters. I bet him at 100-1 for the Masters. And look, I didn't bet him right away for the Players. Wanted to kind of dig into some stuff, but man, it's just the approach numbers again. You take away that Genesis Invitational and what he has done this season on approach, off the tee, it's been fantastic. It's what you're looking for at this event. So I'm in on him too. You even got a better number than me. Best I could find by the time I got down to make a bet this afternoon was 45. And that was disappearing quickly. So yeah, 45. I'm in on Sepp Straka as well. I think there is nothing to hate here. He was 3rd in my last 24 round model that I ran. I mean, over that time, you're talking 22nd in good drives, 5th on approach, 14th birdie or better, 13th in bogey avoidance, 12th in par 5 scoring. It's just everything you're looking for right here. And then, you know, both with him and Morikawa, like before, maybe he's a little bit like Morikawa light, but it's what we talked about before, Matt, where I'm looking for, not only looking for guys that fit the profile, what I'm looking for here in a golfer this week with his game, but have you done well recently? And it has been nothing but recent success for Sepp Straka. So I am not backing away from him at this event, at least. I'm happy to go right back to him, played an outright, and then covered that with a top five on Straka this
week. Oh, sorry to interject. I was like, keep in mind, he was 60-1 when we hit him at the Amex.
Right,
so
yeah.
Much stronger field. This is telling you that, you know, there's some smart people, including you two gentlemen, that are on Sepp Straka this week. So hopefully he's not a regret where I got too price sensitive here.
If anybody is listening to this as soon as this comes out, and I can't promise you it'll still be there, but as of this recording, the 50 is still available at DraftKings currently as of us recording this right now on Sepp Straka. So you can, it is at least there in the evening.
For everybody out there.
On the evening Pacific Coast time here on a Tuesday is still available. That's everything in that range for me. Kelly, did you have anybody else in that kind of 20 to 50 range?
Let's see, just on the outside. So I guess I'll kick off the next range.
Yeah.
But just to bring up, I wanted to circle back because Wes, you're right. You're going to see a lot of different results here from these guys that have even done well, but it's comforting to see that your guy has at least played well at this course a time or two, so he has that experience and the water's not going to scare him off too much or anything. So, you know, Straka, T16 here last year. He's got a T9 under his belt at this event as well, so it is nice to see that. My last and then only other outright is in that next range. I went back to Berger. Wes, I think you're on him too, but yeah, 65-1, Berger. I don't want to say becoming a numbers play, but it is to a degree. I don't know if I had planned to be betting Berger kind of every week here, but man, where he's ended up right now in my models, based off of what numbers you're finding in the betting markets, just doesn't add up to me. So I did fire on Berger, 65-1 again. Just what he's doing ball striking is really elite. 8th off the tee, 36 on approach over his last 24 rounds. Couple shaky approach tournaments, the last two out, but we know that's the strongest part of his game, so I'm not overly concerned with it yet, but he's kind of making up for it everywhere else on the golf course right now, so that's really something to be excited. I mean, 4th on in scrambling over the last 24 rounds, 1st in good drives, so he's kind of checking those boxes, so I'm okay to forgive maybe some struggles with the irons these last 2 weeks. Because we know that's kind of the part of the game that he leans on the most. The results have been there, T15 last week, T25 at the Cognizant, 12th at Genesis, T2 at the Phoenix. Results have been here. Again, we've seen him finish well at this tournament before as well, T13 and a T9 the last couple times he's played. Now, that does go back a little bit because he's missed time due to injury. But, yeah, I'm back in on Berger this week. I do think he's the – I think when we just talk about how we construct our betting card from a betting standpoint, I think with all the volatility here, I did try to dial back and not play as many placements and matchups this week. Just kind of go a little bit more outright heavy. I think Berger fits that to a T with this long of a number. I cover it with a top five. I move on with my day. There's some other guys I couldn't really take that approach with that I'll get to after. But yeah, that is Berger's where I ended my outright. So for me, it is Morikawa, Straka, and then Berger right in that kind of 50-1 plus range.
Wes, I'll let you elaborate since you also have him on your card. It's worth me noting, though, since I did focus hypersensitively on like recent form, Berger was as high as 4th. In one of the versions of the models that I ran, just to kind of let you know, if you do care about super recent form, he was as high as 4th in one of my models.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a gut, putting the form that you guys talked about as well. I think that's another feather in his cap, but this is a little bit gut for me because, of course, relatively, even though he's more South Florida, relatively from the area. So I said I was going to bet Berger every event in Florida. So far, I'm 0-2. Of course, didn't get there at the Cognizant nor last week at Bay Hill. Should have finished top 10, doubled on the last to drop to T15. But didn't play at the Players the last 2 years due to injury, was injured in 2023 and then wasn't qualified because he was out with that injury last year. So I think he might be chomping at the bit to kind of get back here to this Pete Dye beast at TPC Sawgrass. Couple top tens here in his career, 2016, 2021, 13th last time out. Good run of form, 5 top 25s, 3 top 15s, and a runner-up at Phoenix, all in his last 6 starts. So Daniel Berger, I'm going to keep going to him. I think maybe this is a place, too, where it sometimes is chalky and sometimes not, and you will get mid-range guys. Just looking at the recent history, and you can catch that in my column at VSiN.com, you have had shorter guys win here. Scotty last year, or Scotty the year before, Rory, Justin Thomas. But you've also had some mid-rangers, Martin Keimer, Matt Kuchar, Ricky Fowler, and I think Berger kind of falls in line with that.
I didn't get to the outright on him, guys, but I found a Berger over Tom Kim head-to-head. And,
oh, love that.
And, yeah, I mean, like, the difference where they model out to me right now with what Tom Kim's kind of doing, which is not good. By the way, he also got cut this past week, one of the handfuls of guys that got cut this past week, too. Yeah, he Berger, like I said, as high as fourth in mine. Kim's down in like the 50, 55-ish range in the model for me. I like his form. I like Berger's form so much better than I like Tom Kim right now. And just a heads up out there to people that are in a Bet365 market, I do not have access to Bet365 and can't get to it, but they are offering a Berger versus Victor Hovland, which I would bet a car on right now. Like, so if I could. If you wanted to get that, now it is on the move from a juice standpoint. It's all the way out to -130 right now on Berger.
Still a bet.
I would
still
bet it probably to 145. And like, because again, Hovland's game is in shambles, and like Berger is, if anything, kind of rounding into form and becoming more confident. But again, that's if you live in a Bet365 market. I do not have access to Bet365, but it's worth throwing out there for everybody who does. All right, Wes, what else do you got on your card here? I mean, listen, guys, anything outside of 50, I know, like, when people think long shots, it's like, oh, it's got to be triple digit. No, man, if you're hitting a 65-1, that's a friggin' long shot. Like, a 65-1 is not supposed to win a tournament, you know? And so, like, anything past 50 is a damn long shot or whatever. And so, just, you know, when you're building your card, understand, like, how these odds all play into your grand portfolio with how you know, allocate all the funds that you're putting into all of this. So we got Berger on your card. How'd you round things out?
Yeah, this one was a long shot at open. Now it's probably in the mid-range. I'm actually looking for the best price to see if I would go ahead and recommend. I still think there's a 55 out there or a 60 there. I took 70 with one Aaron Rye, who is also, like Ludvig, a now local of Pontevedra Beach. Two solid finishes here, 19th and 35th. He was fourth entering the final round on his debut in 2023.
75 at FanDuel there, Wes. 75.
Oh wow. So I don't have the best of it, but yeah, absolutely. I was on him, of course, last fall when he won that Wyndham and held off Max Grazerman. Sneaky underrated course correlation here, and you know, this isn't one. Even though the stats were pretty good on approach last year, seventh on approach last season, not really incoming. But this is where I go with the course correlation here, and there is a sneaky good one. Of course, we know the Pete Dye designs that are on the PGA Tour. Harbor Town, I think that's one you'd want to look at. Guys that have played well at the RBC Heritage, TPC River Highlands, Kiwa Island, which has hosted a couple majors, PGA West Stadium. And then there's a couple other courses aside from the Florida ones, you know, Innisbrook and PGA National. One of the strong course correlations is at Sedgefield, TPC Southwind, by the way, in Memphis, another one. And you have seen a lot of players over the years that have won both the Players at TPC Sawgrass and the Wyndham at Sedgefield, like Rye did. Siwoo Kim in recent years, Webb Simpson, Henrik Stenson, going back a little bit further, KJ Choi, Davis Love won at both tracks. Adam Scott and Tim Clark have also won the Players and were runner-up at Sedgefield. Kevin Kisner and Sergio Garcia went the reverse order, winners of the Wyndham and then runners-up at TPC Sawgrass. So there is a sneaky good course correlation with Sedgefield. And I realize that's, you know, not always a tried-and-true angle, but I thought it was very interesting to look at some of those. And I think that could apply here where one of these can actually hit. If you look at the recent form with Aaron, fourth at the Mexico Open was 11th last week in Bay Hill. Both of those courses, Vedanta Vallarta and Bay Hill, are really long courses. Probably too long for Aaron Rye, to be honest with you. Not exactly a bomber off the tee. But he's a really good approach guy. And where there's a premium, I think, on a little bit more iron play, I think he could go well here. He obviously has some experience, maybe not so much as playing in these events, only two appearances here, but lives here in the area, trains and practices here. So Aaron Rye at 70-1. And then I do have one triple-digit guy. There were a couple honorable mentions I did consider. Andrew Putnam, Grayson Sigg, that kind of popped on a lot of the stat categories as I was compiling those this week. But I did go with one at 120-1. I went with the Gim Reaper, Doug Gim, and he has started 2025 relatively quiet. Best finish of the season, though, 2 weeks ago at the Cognizant was T11. Sixth for the season on the PGA Tour on approach, ninth tee to green. Good showings here in the past, 16th here last year, sixth in 2022. So maybe the ball striking is going to be good. I assume it's going to be with this guy because it usually is, and he's going to actually make some putts, and that's what you're doing. Then that's why he is 120-1, still seeking that first win. Usually you don't get your first win, by the way, here at the Players' Championship. I had a few trends that I put in the column up at vsin.com. I think there were only two. I think it was Craig Perks and Hal Sutton. One on their debut. Sutton in 83, Craig Perks
Shreveport,
in 2002.
Shreveport, Louisiana's own, yes. Hal Sutton.
Yes, Hal Sutton. Yes. Be the right club today is what is on the actual official scorecard this week at the Players. So, you know, experience usually does matter here, by the way, and those trends up, of course, at the column at vsin.com. But we're going to round it out with Doug Gim, the Gim Reaper, at 120-1.
I'm going to be pissed if they win because I have a top 30 on Rye and a top 40 on Gim. So I'm going to be pissed off if they win. That is
Rye was way up there for me, too. He's one of my first leave-offs.
I was blown away at how high Doug Gim was in these models. Doug Gim is 11th. In one version, actually 11th in both, but he's 11th in both of the like kind of recent stuff going on. So he's coming in basically as hot as anybody out there. And so I have Gim in top 40, still plus money, by the way, guys. Doug Gim, a top 40, is still plus money. Aaron Rye, top 30, still plus money. You're getting plus money on that for these guys to do that. So, so did have those guys on the card as well. Only one more outright for me. Wes might be familiar with this fella. I had to go in and do some research, and when I did, I was like, huh, all right then. But I have a 175-1 on Laurie Cantor. Laurie Cantor plays almost exclusively over there on the European Tour, but he has four starts in 2025, a third, a first, a T35, and a second. So he is on some sort of stupid heater right now. I go in and look at this South African Open Championship that he played a week ago. You don't have full strokes gained. All you have is total strokes gained. 13.3 for the tournament on this. Like, the guy is just playing out of his mind right now. On that one where he finished third, he gained 13 strokes. On the one that he won, he gained 11 strokes total on that one as well. So a guy that just was really high up in the model for me, and I had to do some research. And hey, at 175-1, as we always say, Kelly, we talk about all these outrights. I know you don't do it, you only do it on some of them. Like, I will put a backup bet on any outright that I play, be it a top five, a top 10, a top 20 if I'm talking about some of these longer, you know, bigger dudes where I'm still getting a nice price. But you know, back it up for sure in case you do get a spike performance that's just not quite good enough to win it. But Laurie Cantor, very high in my models, like inside the top 20 on a couple of them. And you can find as high as 175-1 out there on him.
Already has won this year, by the way. Won in the Bahrain event on the DP World Tour. Remember, he was on LIV. Yeah. They didn't renew his contract, so he goes back to the DP World Tour and probably gave him some motivation. Mm-hmm. He's won at least twice in the last calendar year because he did win last summer, I think, in Germany over there on the DP.
Yeah.
Wes, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first example, right, that we have of someone who went LIV and then reworked his way back through the process.
Yeah.
Because there's not a direct LIV to PGA Tour right now, but you can go LIV back to DP World Tour and then get into the – he's qualified this week, I believe, because he cracked top 50 world golf rankings.
Yes.
And is now qualified then to play the Players. So – I don't want to say, obviously, nobody's really looking for loopholes, but he kind of found his way into a loophole, and this is could be the first of several to come here as we hear some of these live contracts are coming up.
Because I think, if memory serves me correctly, I think he was in that top 10, because now on the DP World Tour, if you're not otherwise eligible, like Rory or, you know, one of the really elite European players, you, if you finish, I think, top 10 in these point standings, you do get your card on the PGA Tour. Now, you don't necessarily get in every single event, but if you're high enough, you get in a lot of these events. Like that's how the Højgaards got here on the PGA Tour. So Lauri Kanta, and he's a big hitter too. He's up there and off the tee and driving distance. If you look on the DP World Tour site, they're maybe not as good with some of those stats, but they're getting better. They're certainly better than what Liv has. Liv needs to really update that in terms of how they accumulate their stats and any of that stuff. But Lauri Kanter's really up there off the tee.
A reminder that Wes will have his placement market bets over on the site, as well as his head-to-heads a little bit later. Kelly, I rounded out my placement bets. I'm going to ride the heater with Russell Henley. I took a top 10 on him. He also very high in all of these models, as you would imagine, if I'm doing recency stuff and all that. Like, so Russell Henley, I took a top 10 on him, and then I took a top 20 and a top 10 on Michael Kim, a guy that we are obviously in love with. You and I have been texting about it as soon as the market hit, went in and jumped in on that. Guy's hitting his irons better maybe than anybody out there right now. And he's not making a bunch of bogeys either, which is going to be important on a course like this. So even when he's not making birdies, he's at least making pars, you know. And so I think that might be good enough to keep him at least somewhat in contention this week. So a top 20, and I did kind of ladder to a top 10 here on Michael Kim.
Yeah, he's getting it done everywhere. Like, I was actually surprised when I dug into the numbers. Okay. Sure, approach is good. 24th on approach over the last 12 rounds, so you're really just talking the last three tournaments. I maybe expected him to be ranked higher, rate out higher than that, Matt, of just, you know, looking at what he's done stat-wise and everything. I kind of figured he'd be top 10 over the last 12 rounds, to be honest. But, okay, 24th, that's great. But like you just brought up, first in bogey avoidance, first in scrambling over that time. So kind of the defensive metrics that we're looking at here, he checks the boxes for as well. So, yeah, a top 20 for me and a top 10 on him. And then the other guy I did that with is Tommy Fleetwood. I'm going back to Fleetwood. Same kind of
– I was
going to
bring him up, so I'm glad you brought him up, because I was going to – so he is second in one of the models for me. And, like, I'm glad you did placement market. So, like, it's like anybody that's ever second is with a number that's attached to him, like Fleetwood, it should be an auto bet for me. But, like, the fact that his win equity is damn near zero, I'm just not doing it anymore. But, like, I will say this. If you're playing DFS, if you're, like, whatever, something like that, like, he checks all the boxes for this tournament. It's just I don't know if he can win. So,
yeah, I mean, look, he was one of the, you know, not like it was a big winning week for me. I got him live on Morikawa on Saturday, so it ended up being a small losing event for me. Could have easily have been a little winning event for me, but one of those heroes that helps save you money. I mean, he backed his way into another top 20, Tommy Fleetwood, last week. It's all the dude does. So I'll keep betting him in those markets, top 20, top 10. You know, he was top five in last 12 round model and the last 24 round model that I ran, Matt. He was, I think, fourth and fifth, respectively, in the two that I ran for him. So, look, he's got two top 10 finishes here. Great. Okay. You've seen that he's done it here at this course before. In the last 24 rounds, it's, you know, fourth on approach. He's one of the most consistent approach players in this tournament, and you're looking for the guys that are finding fairways. 10th in good drive gained. He's 16th in overall accuracy off the tee. And he's got, look, PGA Tour this year, it's T11, T5, and T22 and the three times that he's teed it up. So great results since he's been over on the PGA Tour. I'm going to keep playing him. So, yeah, top 10, top 20 for me on Fleetwood. I was actually a little surprised. Plus 120, I hit on a top 20 out there. I was a little surprised he was that
plus money, yeah, I know. Give me that. Absolutely. He's a top 20 machine.
Yeah, and then, Matt, just to round back, I want to go back. Michael Kim, I did play in one tournament matchup. Again, guys, this is – I really went in with the game plan of, hey, there's a lot of variance and results here. I'm just going to focus on outrights, kind of not play a lot of placements. But Fleetwood and Kim, I think those are the right calls with, at least for me personally, the right calls. If you want to bet outrights, go ahead. Tournament matchups, I didn't really think I'd end up on a ton of these either. Matt, I want to know where you found that Berger Tom Kim one, because I'll be adding that. I play Justin Thomas over Shoffley at minus 120. Look, there's enough questions for me still with Shoffley that if all I'm laying is minus 120 with JT, without what his approach numbers are like right now, good enough to, for me to get in on a matchup. And then I played Michael Kim in a matchup too. Thank God the books didn't list more Michael Kim matchups, because God knows how much money I might lose on this guy this week. But I played Michael Kim in a matchup over Davis Thompson then too, I think we saw Davis Thompson coming on strong at the end of last year. I thought he'd make a little bit more noise as we headed into this season. Meh, he's been okay. Minus 120 for Michael Kim on hit, over a matchup over Davis Thompson. I'm in on that one as well. So that is my whole card then.
Yeah, I am trying to really quickly, because I know let's
my entire card, not like my whole card, like I'm a blackjack dude.
Let's get to one and done real quickly. I know people like when we talk one and done strategy with all of this. I imagine you will see a ton of ownership on Scottie Scheffler, rightfully so. I would imagine you see a decent amount of ownership on people that have Colin Morikawa left. I imagine he's pretty high up there. Is there someone to pivot to? Is there somebody that's sneaky good here? Like, what, I mean,
I went Ludwig,
I mean,
I went Straka. I think this is a tough week. I think this is a tough week because what you're bringing up, Matt. I don't think there's a wrong answer there. This is big money, right? This is big money. I don't think there's a wrong answer there at the top. I didn't want to use Scheffler though necessarily. And Morikawa, I believe I already used somewhere. Somehow. Yeah, I think I already used him somehow. So I was kind of stuck between Straka Berger is what I was really considering. And I'm going to go Straka this week.
Wes, any thoughts on one and done?
Yeah, I think I'd probably go Ludwig this week. I really like, you know, the home game factor, I guess, here a little bit. And, very quietly goes about his business down there. And I think he's got some confidence now. I know he finished 22nd last week, but he drove the ball beautifully. Just, you know, kind of had that, you know, like you were talking about earlier, Matt, that little YOLO that really, really took him out of it. But this is a place where YOLO can get rewarded. Yeah. Here at the Players' Championship, because you got to be bold. You're not going to be, you know, winning this event, playing it safe on every single shot, because that's even going to get you in more trouble, because that's what Pete Dye does on this, or did on this design, is really kind of try to trick you a little bit. So I think I like Ludwig's boldness, and I think it's going to pay off this week.
If you're playing DFS, some of these names that we mentioned that we actually like and that rated out very well for us from a modeling standpoint are super, super cheap this week. And so I just went over to DraftKings to throw a lineup together, guys. If you play Doug Gim, Grayson Sigg, and Michael Kim, which, again, Grayson Sigg, I'm glad you mentioned him, Wes. He was 12th.
Yeah, he rated
he
out.
Was 12th
yeah.
in one of mine. Like, he was 12th in one of mine. So if you play Doug Gim, Grayson Sigg, and Michael Kim, you could round out the lineup with Scheffler, Oberg, and Justin Thomas, or Colin Morikawa. You could go either one of them in that third slot there. So you could put Scotty, Oberg, and Morikawa in the same lineup to go along with those three guys or whatever. So again, like if you want to do the stars and scrubs stuff like that, this week is prime for that for sure.
Yeah, number 12 in my last 12 round model as well is one Grayson Sigg.
Henrik Norlander was another guy that was kind of up there for me a little bit. So could be a guy that's a bomb if you're playing, like Matt said, with DFS or, you know, top 40 markets. You get some plus money on them top 40 markets with them guys that are triple-digit outrights to win this thing. Yeah. And that's where you want – that's where I like to live. You know, sometimes in these shorter fields like we had last week at Bay Hill – you know, you can't really play top 30s and top 40s because only like 50 guys make the cut. So, you know, that's typically where I like to be in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Top 5s and top 10s are lucrative, but they're difficult to hit.
Guys, I will say.
Yep, go ahead, Matt, Kelly.
Yeah, sorry. Just real quick, because I had a list too. I had a list of, man, these were close to how do I mix these in? Do I want to do anything with these guys? You guys bet the top name of my list.
What
was
are you doing
Aaron
tomorrow?
Ryan.
You want to make the drive to Arizona? We'll make some DFS lineups. You know, let's make the drive. You know,
stop at the Hoover Dam, taking the sights. Yeah, Aaron Rye definitely was the top of that list. I'm surprised nobody mentioned him, but I guess I'm the guy who mainly backs him here on this pod. Anyways, one Siwoo Kim. Siwoo Kim, right? Nobody had him. Nobody had Siwoo.
Former winner.
He rated out pretty highly for me as well this week. I mean, I guess kind of similar golf profile type to an Aaron Rye. But Siwoo, I got close. I didn't do anything with. I'm saving one surprise a little bit for you guys. Okay, another guy we've talked a lot about this year. I think all three of us have bet him at some point. But I think you can kind of, this is where a guy might rate out high for you, and you need to go see why and check out where he's played at and everything. One, Alex Smalley. We've talked about him a lot this year. Yeah. Rated out pretty highly for me. I just don't think this is the perfect course fit for him. I'd rather use him elsewhere. And just seeing kind of where he's had success, I don't really know if I want to translate that over to the players. I tell you, the guy, he's a bigger name and, you know, my favorite golfer on tour. Last 24, meh, not that great. Last 12, I go and pull up approach numbers and look at what Keegan Bradley is doing, and it is damn impressive. He was 7th in my last 12-round model. So I stayed away from him. I think there's better courses that fit his style out there than this. But, man, I got really close to doing something with Keegan this week.
Something being to be said for momentum, though. Shot that 64 on Sunday at Bay Hill. That's what got me a couple years ago on Rahm at the Memorial after he shot that, like, 64 at the workday where he finished way down the board. Sometimes that happens. And then one thing I'll say for Siwoo, just looking at Siwoo's profile, all the correlated courses I've mentioned, aside from the fact that he's won here at TPC Sawgrass, all the correlated courses he's won on, the Wyndham at Sedgefield, the American Express, another Pete Dye design, the PGA West Stadium course, Wailea, Sony Open in Hawaii, of course, because a lot of the water, and it's a shorter par 70. You've seen a lot of crossover between successful players on those courses and here at the Players, so I'm not mad at Siwoo this week.
Kelly, as far as Smalley goes, he was the one that I disagreed with my model the absolute most on. Like, 91st in this field in strokes gained approach coming in, 72nd in scrambling, 86th in 125 to 150 yards. If you go down to the strokes gained approach, the last 12 rounds entering this, 97th. In this field, he was the dude that I, like, disagreed with the model the most. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm not a slave to the model, right? And so, like, I see names, I go in, I dig in, and then I decide, like, oh, okay, the model put me on to this guy. I didn't agree with the model for me.
Yeah, it's just a funky kind of what he's done, right, results-wise. Because it's T18 at the Cognizant, T10 at Mexico. Mexico, obviously, a weaker field. He lost on approach of both of those, but he's picking up the rest of his game everywhere else. Then you go back, you know, a little earlier, okay, then he's gaining on approach again. So it's I'm very interested to just track Smalley this year because he's – I mean, look, that is – what is that? 4 top 20 finishes and a T21 already on the season?
His pretty around the green season. And his scrambling, I think, really pushes him up there because he's 5th around the green average per round this season on the PGA Tour, and I believe he's 11th for scrambling percentage. So you look, and it's like, man, this guy, it feels like he's playing great. And then the moment you bet him, that happens to me all the time when I'm looking at these. And then the moment you bet him, it's like miscut.
Yeah, but it makes sense with what you're saying, Matt. I mean, you're seeing that red on approach. And shout out to Rick Amon and Rick Rungood, who we use, I think all three of us use his site. Chatted with him a little bit today. So, Rick, thank you, as I'm sharing your website right now.
Guys, again, all of these will be up over on VSiN.com. You will also get Wes's write-up, and anything that gets added will be over there on the picks page, which you get absolutely free from now until the 16th. So go ahead, take advantage of everything over there. Obviously, tournament time in college basketball as well. So you're going to be getting everybody's picks as we head into all these conference tournaments here in the coming days. So take advantage of that. For Wes, for Kelly, I'm Matt. Good luck.